Hi everyone, welcome to the Bootstrap MBA. I'm Jacob Greenfeld, and in this show I document my journey towards an independent MBA-type education that is focused on building bootstrap businesses. Over the course of the next 12 months, I will try to learn everything I can about ideation, software development, and marketing. And I will apply what I've learned by launching a new product each month. Thanks for joining me. Welcome. So I started my little Bootstrap MBA experiment roughly 2 weeks ago, and therefore it's time for an update. And as I already mentioned in the last episode, I decided that I want to learn Rails because I want to be able to build web apps. And this is really the first thing I focused on because I feel like this is the most important part that I need to master before I can do anything else. So ideation and marketing come second, first software development. And I focused in the first week exclusively to learning Rails. So I read the book by Michael Hartl, which is called the Ruby on Rails tutorial, which is recommended by everyone and everywhere. And I will talk a bit about it later. But first, I want to talk about something different I noticed, because it was actually a quite hard decision for me to choose Rails over all the alternatives that are out there. And to be honest, I almost didn't learn Rails. So I almost decided for Laravel or one of the other alternatives. And the main reason is that everything related to Rails seems really outdated. So if you go to the official Rails page, it looks like 10 years old. And, well, actually it's true. So I checked it with a Wayback Machine where you can have a look at how websites looked like in the past. And it's really true that the Rails page really didn't change much in the last 10 years. And the same is true for the documentation, which is in fact exactly looking like it did 10 years ago. And this is, well, not very inviting because you want to build web apps, and the official site is like the perfect shopping window that should demonstrate what is possible with this tool you're looking at. And if the official page looks, well, not so nice, then it's already a big no-go. And of course, this is kind of stupid because Rails is primarily a back-end framework. So, of course, everything design-related has more to do with CSS and front-end frameworks and all these kind of stuff. But still, it feels really strange, at least to me. And I was confused, why does it look so outdated? Will I only be able to build outdated stuff with Rails? And luckily, I was not pushed away too far. So I still decided to learn Rails despite of these warning signs, if you want. But still, this is something I wanted to mention and talk about because I'm pretty sure that a lot of people feel the same way. So if you compare it, for example, to the Laravel page, so the Laravel official page looks incredible. It's fresh, it's inviting, and you feel like, fuck yeah, this is exactly what I want to be able to build, right? And yeah, I still don't know why the Rails page looks so outdated. So there are really only two options, right? Either it's a conscious decision, or they simply don't care, though the core team simply doesn't care. And well, if it's a conscious decision, it's really hard to understand why they would do this. And if they simply don't care, well, that's not a good sign either. But of course, this is kind of hard to believe because just in this, a new version of Rails just came out. which is Rails 6. So people are actively working on Rails. So things are happening. It's not a dead project. But if you're not paying close attention, it can seem as it is. So I also tweeted about it. And someone then also pointed out to me that if you go to the official page, and the new version, as I mentioned, is Rails 6, but on the official page, the starting page shows actually a walkthrough for Rails version 5. So it's really as if they were too lazy to record a new video, which is really a short video, for the new version. Super strange. Yeah, and I also remember that I read somewhere, I can't remember exactly where, that also the talks by David Heinemeier Hansen got somewhat less inspiring in the past few years, which could be a sign that though the enthusiasm is fading. And well, this is something I can't comment on because I haven't watched any talks by him, but I will check it out. And if I find more information on this issue, then I will report them either on Twitter or on here on the podcast. So, and I feel this is worth mentioning because if you look at the popularity of Rails, it's clearly declining. So it's if they have the Google Trends and the number of developers saying that they use it in all kinds of questionnaires and all kinds of surveys. So Rails is really not growing as an ecosystem, which is of course bad. If you want to enter it, you want to enter an ecosystem which is fresh and moving and moving upwards. And yeah, really, really strange that they like purposefully try to keep new people away by making it look ugly and less powerful than it really is. I'm not sure. These are just ramblings. And I also noticed when I had a look at this topic on Twitter, David Heinemeier Hansen, in case you didn't know, is the creator of Rails, made somewhat fun of a comment someone posted, which is that someone pointed out, I think on Hacker News, that Rails is not that great of a choice because most of the developers are quite old, and this means they are quite expensive because they have already families, they are not 20 years old who code some stuff for a coffee or something like that. So, but of course, it shows that Rails is a mature framework, but it also shows that there are not many newcomers in the field. So this wasn't David Heinemeier's intention with this tweet he posted, but still it really demonstrated this clearly that even, well, he should have a clear overview of the Rails ecosystem. And even if he agrees that it's mostly old guys now, well, this is not so great. Nevertheless, after all this kind of negative talk, but please keep this in mind, this is all superficial stuff. So you can build beautiful stuff with Rails, and Rails is not outdated. It's just that it seems really outdated, and they, in some sense, try to keep newcomers away or are not actively working towards making it more inviting. And this is all I'm saying here. So with that, I have to say that I really like Rails. So I'm really glad I made the leap and the decision to use Rails because the structure, the syntax, it's really, really cool. And you can get up and running in like half an hour and you have a working website, an app on the internet, which you can show to other people, and it's working. If you want to add some basic functionality, some CRUD functionality, it just works easily, quickly, out of the box. Really, really cool. So Rails really does as a framework what you would expect it to do. So it does a lot of the heavy lifting in the background, like validation, security. And it's very opinionated, but at least I like it as a beginner because I have no opinions myself. So I'm happy to adopt these opinions in order to learn some best practices. And now if you compare it to the alternative of like using no framework at all or some more minimal framework, I'm pretty sure I would be completely lost, right? How do you start? What do you do first? and all these kind of things. Well, hard decisions if you don't know anything. But in Rails, it's really straightforward. You have these scaffolds and generators, and it's really easy to get going, and your app will be functional. So it feels really usable. You know where to start. I know already after a week how I can get up simply functionality up and running. So I feel confident to build now, and this is really the best I could ask for. So yeah, there is of course a lot of magic, and I don't understand all the stuff or even some of the stuff that's going on under the hood, but at least for now I don't care, because my current goal is really to get some basic understanding, and that allows me to build some really nice apps. So not too fancy, not for lots of users as one, just simple, humble apps. And I think Rails is a perfect choice for me. So of course, something I noticed quickly is that all these conventions Rails uses can be extremely confusing. So at least I was confused all the time, and I still am confused all the time, because there are all these magic links which are, well, almost never spelled out explicitly. So just because you use a certain name in your file, it Rails automatically links it to another file, even though you never mentioned it. So this is, well, of course, cool, because if you know about it, you can save time. But on the other hand, as a beginner, yeah, you have invisible links, and how are you supposed to understand your app if you can't see everything that's going on? But I then noticed that all these, or at least most of these conventions, are optional. So they are time savers, but if you want, you can do things explicitly. So one example is that in Rails, you have controllers, which are, and actions in controllers, and these get activated if you want by the routes. And well, in many cases, the controller is just empty, and it's just definition, then the name of the controller, and end. So nothing in between. And well, it turns out that this is sufficient, because Rails automatically understands that if you write something like this, that it should show the corresponding view. And the view has exactly the same name or as the controller. So if there is a view with exactly the same name as the controller, it will simply be shown. And you can also do this explicitly. So you can write between definition and end, you can write render and then the name of the view, but you don't have to, at least if you want that the view is shown that has the same name as the controller. So this is like a magic link, and you can save a lot of time by following a convention like this. But if you don't know about it, it's kind of confusing if you just see like an empty function, right? And there are lots of, this was really just the simplest example, and others are much harder to figure out. Like for example, if you add a user ID column to a model, like to your database, and then Rails magically maps it to the ID field of a user model. So and the ID field is always added automatically, so you don't even see this field, or you didn't add this field automatically, but still there is a link between a column you created, which is called user ID, and another model, or a column in another model you didn't even create. So of course, if you know about it, it's magic, it's awesome, because you can save so much time through these magic links, but you have to know about them, because otherwise it's just really confusing. And yeah, I know that a lot of people are quite unhappy about this. And for example, I read a post by Derek Sivers, who mentioned, I will just quote him, "I admire the hell out of the Rails core gang that actually understands every line inside Rails itself, but I don't. And I'm sure I will never use 90% of it." So, and then he goes on to describe that he wrote instead his own little system in PHP, because then he understands every line and everything that's there is truly necessary, and this makes him to to quote him again, extremely happy and comfortable. And I perfectly understand this point of view because, yeah, as a Feynman fan, I fully subscribe to his mantra that what I cannot create, I do not understand, right? And this is certainly true for Rails. So I don't understand Rails as long as I'm not able to rebuild it, right? Because only if you are able to rebuild it, at least in principle, you understand all the parts, how it really works. So then you're not just able to use it, but you're actually able to understand it. But at the same time, my current attitude is that I want to use Rails as a tool. And like, for example, I don't need to understand how my car works in order to use it to drive from A to B, right? And this is a perfectly valid approach in many areas of life. And at least for me, I feel currently when it comes to coding, this is also true. So I'm happy to use a framework that does the heavy lifting for me. So that has all the ugly details in the background and I just get the pretty functionality that I like and care about. So yeah. And even as an aside, Michael Hartl in his tutorial points this out, and he's really the number one guy when it comes to learning Rails. And he points out that even he doesn't understand much of the stuff that's going on in Rails. And so even though he's been programming in Ruby on Rails since 2005, and then to quote him, this means either that A, I'm grossly incompetent, or B, you can be a skilled Rails developer without knowing all its innards. I hope for both our sakes that it's better the latter. So yeah, I hope the same. So I hope, and I'm pretty confident that I will be able to use Rails without making an effort to understand every single part of it. At the same time, I actually discovered a pretty cool tutorial online which promises that it will guide you through the process of building at least a very rudimentary version of Rails. And I think if I ever make the decision to level up, to bring my programming skills to a completely new level, this is what I would do. So I would try to build a minimal version of Rails myself in order to understand what is really going on in the background. But yeah, for now, I'm happy with my primitive skills that allow me to build very basic web apps. Now, I've already mentioned Michael Hartl's book, his tutorial, several times, and I want to talk about it for a little bit because it's the number one learning resources. It always has been and still is. It's up to date. And yeah, I think almost everyone who's interested in Rails stumbles upon it. So my personal rating would be 5 out of 10 or 6 out of 10. So I'm clearly not as enthusiastic as most of the other people. And I think I understand where most of the enthusiastic reviews are coming from, but yeah, more on that later. So the one thing I in particular didn't like about Hartl's tutorial is that it's all just draw by the numbers. So he's telling you, do this, do this, do this, and you do it. And well, you copy paste or type whatever he has there in his book, and then you scratch your head and think, I think that makes sense. So yeah, it makes some sense, but you don't really understand it. At least you don't understand the fundamentals. So I think the tutorial is great to get some first understanding of how things work in Rails. So what parts of Rails exist, which folders, which files should you focus on, and where's the work happening. So where are you actually doing the programming, and which of these dozens of folders Rails creates you can forget, at least as a beginner. So it's like a nice tour through Rails, but yeah, I didn't feel confident that I understood any fundamentals and what is really going on. So he uses a lot of these Rails conventions and features, and but he never explains them systematically. So at least I found this extremely confusing. So I, yeah, at many points, I was just confused. What exactly is going on? Why is this working? And it's just in many places not that clear. And for a book that is so popular and it's like, I don't know, the 10th edition, you would think that these kind of issues no longer exist because readers have reported, hey, I don't understand this connection, how this works, but I don't know. But so this is really my main, the main issue I have with this book, that it's not covering the fundamentals of Rails in a systematic way. So it's draw by the numbers and you get an overview, but you don't understand the fundamentals. But the, additionally, there are many like smaller things that I personally didn't like. And the biggest smaller thing for me was that there are constant upsells and cross promotions in the book. And this is super annoying because the book is not cheap and you paid money for it. And still at every second page, he mentions, hey, if you want to learn more about this, buy my book, Ruby, Learn Enough Ruby to Be Dangerous. Learn Enough Ruby to learn enough command line to be dangerous. And like all the time, it's, I really have no problem and everyone needs to make a living, and cross sells, if they are relevant, okay, I have no problem with it, but maybe you could just do it once at the beginning and then you're telling, hey, if there's a command line and command you want to know more about, have a look at my book. And if you want to know more about Ruby, have a look at my book. And then that's it, right? But yeah, he just, it's like pop-up ads sprinkled in between, super annoying. And for example, in front of, at the end of every section are exercises, and they are quite cool because they are short enough to be fun and non-frustrating, and you still learn a little bit by doing them. But at the beginning of them, he always mentions, like in every single section, that, yeah, you can find the solutions online on one website. And if you buy this and this course, you get contact to new solutions. I don't know. Yeah, like really annoying cross-sells that are completely unnecessary because the book is already super successful and everyone who likes the book will have a look at his other books. I don't know. It's really annoying. And I think that these kind of cross-sells didn't exist in earlier versions. And this is where a lot of the praise is coming from and why no one seems to criticize it. Because, of course, people read his tutorial like 10 years ago. And at this time, he didn't have that written that many books. So there weren't that many cross-promotions. But now it's really just too much. And another thing I didn't like it that he links to lots of completely unrelated stuff, like Monty Python videos on YouTube and stuff. And, well, I think it's supposed to be funny, but I'm here to learn something. And then I think this is a relevant link. And I click on it and it opens. And then it's just a Monty Python YouTube video, right? It's you. It's hard enough to stay focused and not get distracted, and then you end up on YouTube, right? Which is always trying to suck you in. And I, of course, then learned to not click on any links in his books, in his book, which isn't ideal either, because I'm pretty sure there would be useful stuff there. But if you're not sure, and it could be some completely unrelated, yeah, stuff, it's you're losing trust. Right. So, and another thing I didn't like is that there are like dozens, I'm pretty sure it's hundreds of references to technical sophistication box 1.2. So right at the beginning of a box of the book, he has a box, the box 1.2, which in which he explains the concept technical sophistication, which basically means, well, eventually we'll have to be able to figure things out yourself. So you will have to learn how to Google error messages and have a look at Stack Overflow. I fully understand that, and this is useful advice for some people who don't know it, but he really mentions this box and the concept technical sophistication like 100 times. It's super, super annoying. And well, it's not that revolutionary of a concept, and you don't need to remind people all the time, because if I were blunt and try to translate it, it just means go figure it out yourself. I didn't write down all details. Use your technical sophistication. Yeah, okay. But this isn't something to be proud of, right? So I don't know. Just something I noticed and didn't like. So related, so I didn't want to rant that much about the book because it's not a bad book. So I learned a lot from it, and it's a nice first step into the Rails world. So you won't get a deep understanding, but it's nice to get a first taste of what Rails is all about. But at least I just wanted to talk about a few points that annoyed me, and maybe just to, if other people feel the same, to give them the feeling that they are not alone, right? So, but just one more thing I wanted to mention is that he's also referencing different sections all the time. So he's, like in chapter 8, he's saying, section 11.2, we'll discuss this, and this in section 12.4. And I don't know who this is for. Well, because you can't jump around, right? You need to understand the first chapters before you can move to later chapters. So these jumping points to later chapters are just not useful, and I'm not sure why they are there. And because they are in the text, so they are not in footnotes, so you can't ignore them. And you, again, as with the other things I mentioned, you're just losing focus, and it's like fluff that shouldn't be there, or at least should be clearly separated from the main text so that you can ignore it easily. So that's all with my little rant. So in summary, yes, the book is useful. It didn't fulfill the high expectations I had after the praise coming from everywhere. And I think that much of the praise for earlier versions came when much of the annoying stuff wasn't present. I'm pretty sure that a lot of it was added in later versions. So earlier versions may be better, but you can't read them because they are about different versions of Rails. So you're kind of forced to use the new version, to read the new version. And I know this from quite a few other books, that later version got worse. And in these cases, you typically say, just read the old version, right? Make sure you read edition 1 and not the second edition, because it sucks. But unfortunately here, this is not possible. You have to read the newest version, because I think you want to know to use the newest version of Rails. So, I just remembered that there is one more thing I personally didn't like about the book. And it's, again, I think, related to fluff or whatever you want to call it. And this is that Hartl emphasizes test-driven development, full stop. So he has this idea that beginners should start by learning test-driven development. So for him, this is the way to go. A good way to program stuff is by doing test-driven development. And this is why you can't start early enough. I think, yes, you can have this opinion probably, but at least I didn't like it. So I think test-driven development is optional, and I currently just want to learn Rails. And if I want to learn test-driven development or test-driven development with Rails, I would read something separate. So I didn't like that he tries to do it at the same time, so teach you test-driven development and Rails at the same time, because they are separate topics. You can work in Rails without writing any tests. So Rails has many cool components that allow you to test your app comfortably, but you don't have to use them. So it's optional, but yeah, he wastes a lot of time, or dedicates a lot of time, to test-driven stuff, And if you're just trying to understand Rails, it's not very helpful, I think. So, and this is a controversial topic and nothing I really want to dive into. So in case you don't know what test-driven development is all about, the idea is that you, if you want to implement some new feature, you start by writing a test. And of course, because the feature currently doesn't exist, the test fails. And then you implement the feature until the test passes. And then you know that that you've successfully implemented a feature and you can be confident in that it's doing what you expect it to be doing because you defined your test first. And also something he mentions is that it gives you confidence in refactoring your code. So if you later want to move certain parts of your code to a different file in order to make it better organized, then you can have more confidence in these kind of refactorings, because if all your tests still pass, then you know your app still works as it's supposed to be. But yeah, I have to really to admit that I'm on Rich Hickey's side when it comes to test-driven development, and I will just quote him. So he says, "I never spoke out against test-driven development. What I have said is life is short and there are only a finite number of hours in a day. So we have to make a decision how we spend our time. If you spend it writing tests, that is time we are not spending doing something else." And this is really the key for me, right? I want to develop apps, and it roughly takes twice the time to implement something if you are doing test-driven development, because you have to first write the tests, and this is not trivial, never, because you have to mock everything, the data, the interactions, all this kind of stuff. And then after you wrote the test, you still have to do all to implement the feature, right? So it's almost double the work. And I understand that if you are working in a big software team with lots of people and much at stake, so if every single bug could cost a company like millions of dollars, then I think it probably makes a lot of sense to use something like test-driven development, where you can be highly confident in your code and there are a minimum number of bugs. But at least for me as a beginner and as a solo developer, aspiring solo developer, I think this is much of it's overkill, and it would actually slow me down. And I know from lots of highly successful solo developers, bootstrap entrepreneurs, who never write a single test, because it's just not that essential, right? You're of course using your site, you're having a little window at the bottom where users can report bugs, and this is usually good enough, because the biggest bugs you will notice when you just test the app yourself. So it's not that complex what you will be building as a solo developer, and therefore you just click on everything you can click and you will see if it does what it does, is supposed to do, right? So yeah, this is just my two cents on test-driven development. And something I didn't like about the book is its emphasis on test-driven development, which is optional and he shouldn't give the impression that it's essential for beginners to learn this, because it's making everything much harder than it really is. So, and again, I'm not sure if this is something he added later or if it already existed in earlier versions, but I could imagine very well that this is a later addition, and that much of the praise is coming from a time when the book was much shorter and a lot of these kind of stuff wasn't present in the book. So yeah, I will leave the topic test-driven development with another quote by Rich Hickey. So in case you didn't know, Rich Hickey is the inventor of Clojure, which is a Lisp dialect, so a completely different programming language, completely different programming paradigm, but still just think that at least I agree with his opinions on test-driven development. So the quote, I want to mention is also from the same interview, and he says, a bad design with a complete test suit is still a bad design. So that's really all I wanted to say on the topic. Now, another thing I found really useful, because as I mentioned, Hartl's tutorials left me with lots of question marks in my head, is the Rails guides. And I already mentioned the Rails guides because they are like look very outdated, but they are actually very useful. However, they are also completely overwhelming. So if you're having a look at the Rails guides website, it's just dozens of guides, and you, well, what are you supposed to click and what should you read first? So you really need a guide to the Rails guides. And luckily, I really found such a guide. I found a guide to the Rails guides, and in there, I found exactly 4 guides in the Rails guides that I, articles in the Rails guides that are essential reads, and I read them, and this was exactly what I needed. So one was about routing, one was about controllers and actions, one was about models, and one was about views. And in these files, in these articles, all the conventions that were confusing me as I read Hartl's book are explained. They are carefully defined, and there's also a lot of advanced stuff that I felt I could ignore, but at least the fundamentals that I was struggling with were explained nicely in these 4 guides. And after reading these guides, I actually felt confident to start building my own first Rails app. And I will link to these 4 guides that I just mentioned in the show notes. So, but as I just mentioned, after reading them, I finally felt really confident that I understand at least the very, very basics, and started to build my very own primitive Rails app from scratch. So, and I already mentioned in the last episode that my plan is to release something, a product, every month. So I hope that this primitive Rails app I started will turn into my first product. This is my current plan. It's please don't have any expectations. So big expectations. It's super basic, nothing fancy going on. And it's obvious to everyone who knows a thing about Rails that you can build something like this in an hour, or I don't know if you have experience, in a day. But still, for me, it's currently how I'm spending my time. I'm building a very primitive app that I will hopefully release till the end of the month. So it will be my first project that I will launch. So I will not doing any real launch. It's far too basic to be any real product, and it has no pricing, and so I will not earn any money. But you will understand once I've launched it. So I'm learning a lot actually by doing. So I spent the first week just reading, and now I'm just building, or primarily building, and I've switched to a just-in-time learning approach. I'm trying to build certain things, and then I'm having a look at certain articles that explain how exactly you can do X in Rails, and then I'm doing it. So this is how I'm learning now, currently, that now that I have at least some understanding of the basics. And yeah, I still have a lot to learn. So there are lots of folders in the standard Rails configuration that I've never touched and I have no understanding of. And one thing in particular I want to learn more about, and is that I currently don't like my workflow. Because in Hartl's book, the workflow he uses is to use Cloud9, which is an development environment, an integrated development environment, which lives in the cloud. So it was bought by Amazon. It's now part of AWS, Amazon Web Services. And then the Rails app gets pushed to Heroku. And it's quite cool because you get up and running quickly. But at the same time, it doesn't feel very optimal to me. So, for example, one thing that happened just yesterday is that suddenly I tried to start my Cloud IDE, my Cloud9 account, and get access to my environment. And there was just an error which said environment error, unable to access your environment, Amazon EC2 experiencing capacity issues for your instance in this region. Try again in a few minutes. Resize instant or contact support if the issue persists. And I was just, okay, let's wait a few minutes, but nothing changed. So the problem existed still after an hour, after 4 hours, after 7 hours. And I got kind of scared because, of course, the day before was the day when I was in a hurry and I didn't commit my stuff to GitHub, so I didn't have a proper backup and was really scared that I would lose my progress. And that would have been quite annoying. And of course, super annoying that I wasn't be able to program anything during the day. So it was just an error and I tried to reach out to the support. And well, they just sent me a link to a document which wasn't completely not helpful because it basically just said, wait. And the second option they sent me is to upgrade the support plan because you have to pay like $30 or minimum of $30 a month to get proper support on Amazon Web Services. And of course, I just wanted to use this Cloud IDE service, which is free at least in the first year. And so I was really screwed. There was nothing I could do and the support, there was nothing, no one I could talk to or who could help me. And luckily, so on the next day, it worked again. But I'm scared for life now. So I will not rely on this kind of product ever again. So I will move to something different as soon as I find a good alternative. So I like, of course, that it's working in the cloud because it means I can switch seamlessly between different computers. And this is something I like to do between my computer and my laptop. So I would favor something like this, but of course, using GitHub, it's not a big issue to switch to a different computer. And so probably because I won't risk another outage like this again, I will use something local, but I haven't looked into it and will. This is really the next thing I want to level up in that regard. I want to understand how to set up a proper local development environment. And also the second thing I mentioned, which is recommended in the Hartl book and is really, I think the standard is Heroku for hosting. So you push your app from the development environment to Heroku and then it's live immediately, which is super awesome. But at the same time, I think Heroku is really awesome, but it's also really expensive. At least if you're trying to do what I want to do, which is a lot of tinkering. So I want to experiment with different apps and try this and try that. And at Heroku, you have to pay around $7 per month per project, per app. And this is a lot of money compared to the alternatives that I'm used to. Because, for example, if you're using something like Laravel, or just a standard PHP framework, then you buy a cheap virtual server on Linode or Vulture or DigitalOcean, which costs around $5 per month, and you can host as many apps, as many websites as you like. This is, of course, a big, big difference compared to $7 per app. And I had a very quick look at the alternatives, and it seems as if you could install something like Heroku on your own virtual server. And this is something I will experiment with and then report back how it went. So yeah, Heroku is really cool to get started, but I think there are also lots of features that I'm not needing, and also scalability and all these kind of issues are nothing I care about, because like I mentioned, the virtual private server at Linode or DigitalOcean, which costs $5, can support like 100 users at the same time. And even if it crashes and becomes slow, you can just upgrade with a click of a button to a bigger one, which costs then $10 or maybe $20 a month. And you can support like thousands of users at the same time. And so I would prefer an option, a cheaper option where I have more control and can tinker a little bit more and do more experiments at a cheaper price, because $7 per app seems quite expensive, at least to me currently. And because my approach will be to, well, release lots of apps in order to see what sticks, and Heroku is not really suited to it. So there is a free plan, of course, with Heroku, but you're not getting an SSL certificate, or you can't use an SSL certificate with it. And also you have this sleeping problem, which is that when an app isn't used for like 30 minutes, it goes to sleep. And then if someone tries to visit the site, it takes a lot of time before it starts again. So you have this sleep mode for the free tier, which is of course understandable. So great things shouldn't be free, but Heroku, yeah, is just really expensive. And this is really everything I'm wanted to say. This is where I'm currently at. I'm building my first site, my first Rails app, which I started from scratch. I went through Hartl's tutorial, which was okay. And then I got some real understanding by reading the Rails guides. And I will publish another update probably when the first project is live, though the first Rails app I talked about. And as I mentioned, it will not be mind-blowing. So please, no big expectations. But until then, bye-bye.